I'd like to call the meeting back into session after recess. We need a motion to do that.
Motion to reconvene the hearing of Officer Torres.
Second it.
All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion carries.
Okay, we are back in session, and I believe Sheriff Christopher was on the stand. And, of course, Sheriff Christopher, you understand you're still under oath.
Before we start the cross, I wanted to hand up to you the detailed report from the Delaware State Police showing that the time of the call that was referred to on March 2nd was at 6:04 p.m. and not at 4:40. Good afternoon, Sheriff Christopher.
Yes, how are you, sir?
Fine. You were previously employed in the Sheriff's Department as a deputy under Sheriff Reed, is that correct?
Chief deputy, that's correct.
So you were the chief deputy under Sheriff Reed?
Sheriff Reed, that's correct.
And the daily log sheets that are in use now, are they essentially the same log sheets that were in use back then?
For the most part, yes, sir.
Right. And so these are records that the Sheriff's Office uses to record time of service, attempted service, correct, on individuals?
It's more or less to describe the service that it was completed, mm-hmm. and in a sequential fashion, it shows that the deputy was out attempting to serve or serving documents and a said sequence on the document.
And as Sheriff, as Chief Deputy Lineweaver testified, you expect as Sheriff that those time entries are going to be accurate, correct?
As much as it can be, yes.
Okay. And are deputies in the county employed by the county? Are they paid by the county?
Yes, they are paid by the county.
And the daily log sheets that we've been referring to, those are used by the Sheriff's Department to submit time entries, are they not, for the work of the deputies, including overtime?
The daily log sheet for what purpose?
Are not the daily log sheets used by the Sheriff's Office for submission of payment, such as overtime payments, to record the deputy's time?
Yes, it's not an exact perimeter, but it's supposed to be used as a guideline for the deputy to record the time that he comes in and out. If you look on the top of the document, you'll see time in, time out. In fact, there's two of them, time in, time out, time in, and time out. That's for a split day or a possibility of a split day, correct?
So that's backup, though, for, say, an overtime request that a deputy may submit?
For the purposes of his memory, correct.
Okay. Now, you said the sheriffs are paid by the county. They receive county benefits?
Yes, they do.
And they work in county-owned offices?
Yes.
They drive county-owned vehicles?
Yes, they are.
And the vehicles, the fuel in those vehicles is paid for by the county?
That's correct.
You said in your direct, did you not, that your understanding is that deputies are unclassified employees under the county personnel code?
That's the way I understand it.
Now, as the head of the office, you understand that the honesty and integrity of the deputies is paramount, correct?
Absolutely.
So if a deputy were to falsify time entries on a daily log sheet, you would agree that would be a breach of the standards of ethics that you expect?
Sure, if it's intentionally done.
And if it's repeatedly done, that'd be a very serious breach, would it not? Just as
I didn't hear the first part.
If it were done repeatedly, would that not be a very serious breach of the standards that you would expect in your office?
Absolutely. I'd want to know about it if it's something that's occurring.
And in fact, as a good steward of the county taxpayer money, if a deputy were submitting false overtime requests backed up by his log sheets, you would consider that to be a breach of the policies of your office, would you not?
Absolutely, if it's false.
You had mentioned in your direct testimony at one point that you would look to the date of April 4th, and you had called Chief Lungo. Do you remember that testimony?
Yes.
And he verified that Deputy Torres was serving papers at or about 12:30, correct?
That's correct. That's what he indicated.
Right. So have you looked at the GPS record for that day to see if it verifies that let me finish.
Sorry, go ahead.
Have you looked at the GPS log for that day to show that it verifies, just as the county said, that Deputy Torres was in serving papers at 12:30?
I looked at the initial GPS log that was presented to me by Karen Brewington.
So you didn't look at the daily the GPS report for that day to verify?
I didn't have it.
Okay. So you don't know what it says?
At this point, I do because I reviewed it recently. But if you're talking about the time when I was doing this, you said when I called Chief Longo, no, I didn't have it.
Okay. But you've looked at it now, and you know it accurately shows that Deputy Torres was there at the time the GPS says he was there, correct?
Where?
When you served Chief Longo.
Yes, it shows that he was, in fact, there.
So
I don't know if he was serving the document at a particular time, but yes, his GPS is reflective.
So the GPS was accurate, correct?
Yes.
Now, you heard Deputy Chief Lineweaver's testimony. You're not here to tell us, are you, that the GPS is inaccurate?
The only thing I can tell you is when I looked at the GPS report that was submitted to me, it was inaccurate in my mind.
So you're saying on all 20 days that were testified to by Ms. Brewington and testified to by Mr. Torres that the GPS report is wrong?
I can't speak about the 20 days. Okay. I have not done an extensive review of the 20 days because I didn't know which 20 days were in question.
Okay, and did you have access to the GPS system, do you not?
I do not.
You have access to GPS reports?
No, I do not.
As department head, you don't believe you have access to that system?
The only thing I have is a report that comes in way of a red flag or an alert. I don't have any other access to it.
Do you
not
know
that I've been made aware of.
So you don't know if, in fact, as head of a department, you can access the GPS system just like any other department head?
I understand that other department heads have access to it, but at this point, I do not have access to it. It has never been nothing submitted to me from the county that says this is how I access it.
Have you ever done a test of your own, similar to one that Mr. Godwin did, to verify whether or not the GPS was accurate?
Yes, I have.
Okay, and did you submit that report to anyone?
No, I haven't, because it was not official. It was done on my time off.
So how did you do a test if you didn't have access to the reports then?
Basically, what I did is I used my own GPS system to see if there was any failures in that system.
Well, how did you compare it to the county GPS if you didn't have access to those reports?
I couldn't.
You couldn't. So you don't know then if the county, you never did a test of the county system itself, correct?
I didn't have access to it.
Okay. You say you didn't have access to it, but you did not do any test similar to what Mr. Godwin did to verify the accuracy of the GPS.
Not officially.
You didn't have access to the county system, you said. So you couldn't have been verifying the county system, correct?
Only what was submitted to me through the attorney.
Okay. Only the GPS reports that were given to you by counsel? Is that correct?
I don't recall the counsel giving me a GPS report.
I mean your attorney, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I said a few days ago.
I said counsel, I meant attorney, not county counsel.
Yeah, I only took what information that I saw and looked at the GPS itself. Looked at the times, I tried to look at some of these addresses to familiarize myself with where they were talking about.
All right. Now, on March 27th, there was a county council meeting, correct?
Yes.
And did you have some prior knowledge that there would be speakers there who were going to make a comment about the legislation that was being introduced in the General Assembly concerning the Sheriff's Office?
Prior knowledge.
Were you aware that there were going to be speakers coming up in the public session?
I wasn't aware of any speakers.
Well, how did you decided to come and be present if you didn't know there was going to be some presentation concerning?
Because it's a topic that, in my mind, directly attacks the Office of Sheriff and the existence of the Office of Sheriff.
Right. Are you telling us you didn't know that there would be speakers coming that day to present remarks on that topic?
I had no idea if there was going to be any speakers there or not.
So you just showed up that day?
That's correct.
And you just had your deputy show up that day as well?
We were in a staff meeting, and I told anybody that was in the staff meeting they would have liked to come, they were certainly welcome to come.
Okay, and did you, you didn't order Deputy Torres to come?
Never.
Okay, and you didn't expect him to be paid while he's here, did you?
No, as long as he's off the clock, I had no difficulty with that.
Okay. So you expected him to be off the clock?
Pretty much, but he told me coming up here that he had to make himself subject to call for family court documents that might come out that day.
So you expected, though, that during that time he was here, he would not be paid, correct?
We didn't discuss it. I wasn't pre-thinking about any of that at all.
Well, you said in your mind he should not be paid, correct?
Based on the policy, yeah.
Okay. And he did, in fact, submit an overtime request that day for 3.5 hours, correct?
Yes, he did. I believe so. I have not seen it.
Are you aware that Chief Deputy Lineweaver approved that request and submitted it to the county?
He approves all the deputies' requests so long as he looks at it and reviews it. We don't review every single one.
So he trusts in the integrity of his of the deputies when they are submitting information saying they're entitled to overtime, correct?
Well, it'd be ludicrous not to trust them.
Okay,
they
so
got a sidearm on their hip. They swear to take an oath. We trust Congress, too.
Okay, so it's critical that you have trust in your deputies when they submit time entries.
Absolutely.
For overtime.
I have to.
Right. And you're aware that Chief Deputy Lineweaver approved that request on March 27 that included 3.5 hours of overtime during a period in which Mr. Torres was here for 2.75 hours.
After the review of it, in my mind, basically he subjected himself to the on-call status of family court.
He was sitting here, and he was entitled to be paid for those 2.75 hours?
When he told me that he was awaiting family court for documents to come in here for him to serve after he had been told that morning to be on standby,
okay.
I would say if you expect him to be here and he can't leave, then he should be paid.
Then he what?
Then he should be paid if he's expected to stay here.
Should be paid. So you expected him to be here waiting for papers from the family court is what you're saying?
That's what my understanding was that morning.
And so even before he came here, you had the understanding that he was waiting for papers from the family court?
I was made aware of that in the staff meeting.
Okay. Well, didn't he have other papers to serve that day? I mean, you looked at the daily log. Weren't there other locations when service was made?
I did not review the rest of his documents to see if he had any that day.
Well, would you be surprised to see that day, March 27, that he had other papers to serve that day?
No, it wouldn't surprise me, but that's not to say that the papers needed to be deciphered or he was waiting for information from the post office or the court itself or the attorney's office.
Well, I need to understand what you're saying. I mean, first you said that he was not to be paid, not to be on the clock when he's here. Now you're saying that he was to be paid because he was supposedly on call, correct?
Well, you just deciphered two different situations. I understood what you were saying before was, would it be a normal practice? And my answer to you was no. But when submitted the question, based on the understanding that I had of that day, him being on call or standby for the court, then certainly if I expect him to be here and he has to be here to wait around for the documents to come in, which are usually family court document papers, are urgent and time sensitive.
And they're usually in the afternoon, correct?
I didn't hear you.
They were usually in the afternoon, correct?
They're all throughout the day.
Wasn't there testimony from yourself and from Mr. Torres that usually these papers are made available late in the day by family court? That's one of his obligations?
Well, the bulk of the pickup is after 4:30 sessions, yes.
So are you saying that a deputy can just sit around the rest of the day and not serve his other papers waiting for that?
Am I saying they can sit around?
Right.
No.
So wouldn't you have expected if he didn't come here to the council meeting, he'd be out serving papers?
I expect him to be serving papers.
Okay. Now, you've heard the testimony about the incident when he went to the home of a person to serve a paper. I believe that was on March 2nd.
You'll have to give me more detail.
Where he went into the person's home because he found the door unlocked. He testified he called you directly.
Oh, that's correct, yes.
Right. So is it true that he called you on or about March 2nd and told you that he was going to serve papers and he found a door to the residence unlocked?
That's correct.
And is it true that you told him to go into that person's residence without their permission?
He had a situation that he was assessing at the time where the homeowner could have been breached.
Did you tell him to go into that premises without the homeowner's permission.
That's correct. I want him to go in there to make sure the homeowner was okay. If there was a burglary in there, person could have been subject to some sort of an attack.
And you didn't have a search warrant? You didn't seek the assistance of any other?
You don't need a search warrant with probable cause, sir.
Oh, probable cause is the door is open? Is that right?
If the door was open and it was appeared to be ransacked.
Well, how did he know it was ransacked until he went in the house?
Well, he testified he could see it was ransacked from the door.
Okay. So you think if he opens the door and finds out the house doesn't look good because there are twins there, that that's probable cause to go into the house? Is that what you're saying?
If he sees something that looks like, I mean, he's a trained police officer. If he looks at something and assesses it to be something that looks like it's breached and it could have been an attack on that homeowner, then his judgment call basically is to make sure the homeowner's safe.
So you told him to go in there without the permission of the homeowner?
That's correct.
All right. Now,
homeowner wasn't available at the time to get permission.
Excuse me, Sheriff Christopher. During your direct testimony, your voice was very clear, and I don't know if you're closer to the mic or not, but it's
something appears to be different here. I'm not sure what it is.
Yeah, maybe move back just a little bit, see if that helps a little better.
No problem. Can you hear me now?
That sounds much clearer. Thank you.
Okay, now, you've heard the testimony about Wilson Hill Road, correct?
Yes.
And you never spoke with the Mr. Malik, the owner of the home at Wilson Hill Road, correct?
Spoke with him when?
Well, when did you speak with him?
I've never spoken with him.
You never spoke with him until when?
Until the court proceedings here.
Today?
Yes.
So during the course of the investigation, you never spoke with him to find out what Mr. Torres was doing
at
his residence? Is that correct?
Not myself, no.
Okay. And did you ever speak with Mr. Torres about the Fruitland Avenue address where he was stopping, where his wife worked?
I don't recall asking him about that particular address because I didn't know anything about that address.
So you never asked about that as far as you know?
I didn't ask him anything about Fruitland Avenue because I didn't know anything about that address.
Okay. There was some testimony in your direct about the idle time, including time at Wilson Hill Road and on Fruitland Avenue. Do you recall that?
About the idle time at those residences?
The idle time in general for Mr. Torres.
Idle time probably with the Wilson Hill Road, but not Fruitland Avenue.
When you testified, didn't you testify about that there was to be expected idle time for deputies who were in performance of their duties?
Absolutely. All the deputies have idle time.
Okay. And do you realize that during the two-month period of the audit, Mr. Torres had 143 hours of idle time?
During the audit times?
February 27 to April 27, 143 hours of idle time.
Yes.
And that's an eight-week period. At 40 hours a week, that would normally be 320 hours, correct?
Correct.
And were you aware that Mr. Torres was off on vacation 1 week, so that's 280 hours of actual time at work during that two-month period, correct?
That's calculated in the idle time as well?
No, I'm asking you total working time in the eight-week period. 1 week was a vacation, so that comes off the 320. Now we're down to 280.
I'd have to review the documents for that to tell you exactly when he was on vacation.
Well, I'm asking you to assume he was on vacation for 1 week in that time period.
Okay? Okay. Yeah.
And also assume he took another day vacation that was turned in later. We've heard the testimony about that.
Another day of vacation?
Vacation, right. So he actually had 272 hours of working time in that eight-week period. Okay, assume that.
Assuming.
Okay. So if he had 140 hours of idle time, that's over 50% of his working time was idle time.
Okay.
And is that acceptable to you?
Basically, if he's trying to decipher documents, I just testified to you not too long ago that Chief Deputy Lineweaver can show on an average stop 10 to 20 minutes, and if you bring it back down, or I'm sorry, 3 to 20 minutes, if you bring it down to, say, 10 minutes on a stop, times 37 stops a day, even if you reduce it, it's still 200-plus minutes idle time.
Well, you realize that idle time is time when the vehicle stopped, correct? Not in transit from one location to the other.
Right, sitting still.
So he had a very pretty large territory, you said, correct?
He did.
He had the second largest.
Yes.
So in addition to the idle time, he would have to spend a lot of time driving between locations.
I didn't hear the question again.
In addition to the idle time, he would have to spend a lot of time driving between locations, correct?
Normally, yes.
Okay. So are you saying that it's acceptable to you for him to be sitting in his vehicle stopped more than half of his day?
If he had documents that he needed to decipher, and you saw the stack of documents that he often did have, then it would certainly fit into the necessity for him to do so.
Did you ever review with him the fact that more than 50% of his day was spent with his car running and stopped?
Yes.
And you found that to be acceptable use of the time of a deputy sheriff in the county, correct?
Well, to go back with you again, I didn't see those GPS reports until all of this came to head, but we addressed it as to making, in a general sense, making the most of your time. When you have to stop and sit somewhere to decipher papers, we want to do it in a safe manner, prudent manner, not usually sitting on the side of the highway. So as far as review in that sense was done in a general sense, not based on a GPS report.
So you didn't review, though, how much time he spent of his day stopped idling, did you?
I didn't have a report to go by.
So the answer to that is no?
I didn't have a report to go by.
And I ask my question again. It's acceptable to you for one of your deputies to spend over 50% of their time stopped and idling. Is that correct?
It's acceptable to me for my deputy to spend 50% of his time in that area of audit if, in fact, he had the documents themselves to basically show that he was working on those documents. If he had less documents or about the average document that the other deputies have, in the smaller areas, then I would say that it'd be something of concern. But since he has a pile of documents, usually greater in number than the rest of the deputies, I would say it's probably within acceptable range.
Who has the largest area in the county?
I would believe that Benny Gordy.
And what area does she have?
Benny Gordy has the Seaford, north of Seaford, south Seaford, Del Mar area.
There have been no issues with her overtime requests, have there?
It's a he.
He, I'm sorry. You said, well, I didn't hear what you said the first name was.
Benny.
Oh, Benny. I thought you said Betty. I apologize.
Oh, sorry. Nothing's ever been audited as far as I'm concerned with Deputy Gordy. I can tell you what I understand, just like Deputy Torres, I see the stacks of papers that he has. And the audit that comes in the way of me looking in at what he has to do on a daily basis, there's no way he can get these documents done unless he's on the ball.
Well, if the deputy is at home, according to the GPS, and they don't start their day until 10, 11 o'clock, are you saying that's acceptable conduct?
Start their day?
If they don't start working, they don't turn their car on, they don't leave their driveway until 10, 11 o'clock in the morning, is that acceptable to you?
Car doesn't have to be on for him to be working.
So you're saying it would be okay for the deputy to be at home working without the car on?
I testified to that earlier. Right. If they have stacks of documents that they need to decipher, they got to go to some resource somewhere. They can't just sit there and think it through and think the numbers and the deciphering of the document and it magically appear. They have to go to a resource. If they don't have the resource available to them at the office because it's crowded, they have to use some form of resource, whether it be telephone, laptop, anything that they can use, whether they can do it somewhere safely before they turn the car on and get to their route. There's been some complaint as to letting the cars idle because of wasting gas in the past. They've been told not to let the car idle too long. Basically, if they have to decipher the papers, to decipher them first and then get going on their route. So it's conceivable to think that any deputy could spend an hour, maybe 2 hours, depending on the stack of papers that they have, to decipher that first before they actually took off on the route and started the car.
It would not be acceptable to you for a deputy to put down that they had served someone at, say, 8 in the morning when they were actually at home doing some other kind of work, correct?
That depends on the contact or attempted contact that they made or arrangements they made with the person to be served.
I'm asking you, if they said they made personal service at a time when they were at home and that wasn't true, is that acceptable to you?
If they made personal service and the GPS says they're home or they say they're home?
Let's take the GPS out of it. Let's just say that they claimed on their daily log that they had made personal service on someone at 8 in the morning, and they had not, in fact, done that. That would not be acceptable, would it?
By standard of actually handing the document, no. But if the arrangement were made, they made contact them 8 o'clock in the morning, that person responded and said, I'll meet you wherever. He can write down 8, whatever he started to attempt to serve, and then go back into it later on and say, well, I actually contacted him at 9:30 or 10 o'clock.
Doesn't the reports show that there have been telephone contact, for example, when a deputy attempts to make a telephone call to serve someone?
I'm sorry, the echoes get me again.
Isn't it true that on the daily log reports that reports are made when the deputy calls someone in an attempt to make contact for a service?
Most of the time, the attempts are logged in. Not all the time, though.
Okay.
There's times when we're standing in the office and an attempt is made to contact an individual just to get an address,
and
not necessarily a physical contact with a person.
And a deputy would not call someone who was considered to be a service evader, would they, before they went out to serve their papers?
A service what?
A service evader, someone who's trying to evade service or process?
Well, it depends. If you contact a person via phone and they don't give you the information, or I'm not going to tell you my name, I'm not going to tell you my address, they would be considered at that point an evader. And then a second attempt, usually by policy, would be made to make actual physical contact if they have the proper information as far as the address or where that person can be located.
Okay. Again, though, you expect the daily log to be accurately reflecting actual service of papers, correct?
As far as it can be, yes.
Now, in connection with the investigation that was done, in fact, you claim that they has something to do with the lawsuit you filed, correct?
I believe so.
Okay, you filed that lawsuit in around May 23rd or thereabouts?
I'm not sure when the attorney filed it exactly. I was told a couple of days later that the transaction had taken place.
Okay, so, but that was towards the end of May, correct?
Yes.
In fact, the document I have is May 22nd. Does that sound correct?
Sounds about like that, on or about.
On or about May 22nd. Well, it's stamped in on what I have, May 22nd.
Okay.
Okay? So, now this investigation began on or about April 24th, is that correct?
As far as I can, the information has been given to me, yes.
Okay, so that's over almost a month before the lawsuit was filed, correct?
Yes.
Did you send a memo to your deputies and employees not to speak with the County Administration and Human Resources Department?
I gave requests to Chief Deputy Lyon. We were to let the individuals know in the office that if anybody in the county tries to contact them and usurped or go around me about questioning their timesheets and what have you, to let them not say a word, to contact me first, because I want to address what the purpose and the reasons for.
And did you put that in writing to the
I did not.
Deputies? You did not. So Mr. Torres is wrong. There was a written document to that effect.
Well, there may have been a written document, but it came from the chief deputy, if it came from anyone.
Okay. Didn't come from you?
No, sir. Not the written part.
And did you, Mr. Lawson wanted to speak with you on or around May 9 about the potential termination of Mr. Torres. And you said you would not speak with him. Is that correct?
No.
And you testified that you had recorded Ms. Brewington on May 3rd?
Correct.
And you didn't tell her you were recording her?
No, I didn't.
Okay, so you secretly recorded her on May 3rd. In the conversation with concerning the meeting with Mr. Lawson, did you record that conversation?
On which date?
May 9?
No.
Okay, so you recorded the May 3rd, you didn't record the May 9?
No. On May 9th, the phone call you're talking about?
Yeah.
No.
Okay, and you hadn't told anybody that you were recording them until when you testified to that effect?
When I talked to her on May 9th. I told her I'd recorded on May 3rd.
All right, now, there was testimony about the sheriff's office and you know, times that people are there and not there during your direct? You said it was crowded office, that sort of thing?
I don't follow your question.
Do you recall testifying this morning about the sheriff's office being crowded at times and people having to go other places to work?
Correct.
Okay, now, between 8:30 a.m. and 4:30 p.m., is there a system by which the county can track whether or not a deputy was in fact in the building?
A system meaning the GPS system?
No, have you ever heard of that, something called the key fob?
Yes.
So in order to access the building prior to 8:30 and after 4:30, a deputy or someone else needs to have a key fob to enter the building, correct?
Yeah, but I often enter the building with someone else's key fob as walking in front of me.
Right. Well, but if someone entered the building and it showed that they entered the building before 8:30, and the GPS shows that same information, doesn't that tell you the GPS is accurate?
Yeah, I would say if it lines up, sure. Okay. Sure.
That's all I have.
Ms. Murray.
Are you aware that Deputy Torres was not paid for the 3.5 hours of overtime?
Which 3.5?
The 3.5 hours of overtime from March 27th.
Yes, I am more recently understood that, not at first.
Okay. I hold in front of me SC-262, which is an overtime request that was signed by Chief Deputy Dennis Lineweaver, with a note appended to it. I believe this is Todd Lawson's signature, or initials, that says 4/10/2012, only 0.75 hours approved.
I may have reviewed that, but I review so many documents in a day, it's hard for me to...
My question is, did Mr. Lawson contact you when he made a change to the overtime request?
No.
Is 143.18 hours of idle time in a two-month period unbelievable?
No.
Okay. Are you aware that Deputy Torres does leave his vehicle on?
He had to, because it would kill his battery if he didn't leave it running.
Okay.
As it did with my car.
During the course of the investigation, were you given detailed information such as the total amount of idle time?
At first?
Yes.
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay. When were you made aware of it?
I was only given the initial report, which Chief Deputy Lineweaver presented to me when we got back to the office. I had a couple eyeball contacts in Karen Brewington's office. I looked at it briefly. I didn't get into the detail of it because I didn't understand all of the columns and everything, lines and columns. That basically was the only report that I got to review anything in a way of a what I would consider a detailed report of a GPS report.
And do you believe that the county council knew you were going to file your lawsuit?
Yes, they knew it was coming.
Okay. And have you heard County Council Member Sam Wilson make a comment about the number of deputies that you have?
Yes.
And what was that comment?
Comment was when he was asked if the County Council had intentions to replace the two deputies, meaning Deputy Torres and Deputy Mike Warshaw. Deputy Warshaw had left a month or so ago, 2 months ago, to Ellendale Police as the chief there. When I inquired, we started the testing procedure to replace that deputy. In fact, we had done the interviews and everything that was necessary, and we were right at the hinge of hiring that person. In fact, we had chosen that person. And we were trying to contact him to let him know what he needed in the way of preparation for us for training purposes so we could commence some of that those tasks. Is when I talked to... I called Todd Lawson twice. On the second time, he had called me back. I think he missed me once. I then called him back, and then he called me back again. And I believe that was June the 6th. I'm not 100% sure on that. But he called me back and said that they're not going to replace either deputy.
And Sam Wilson was discussing that?
Yes. He was asked, why wouldn't they do that? And he said he's been doing an adequate job with what he's got.
Did he say anything else?
Yes.
And what did he say?
He said he didn't understand why we needed a bilingual deputy. Anyway.
Do you believe you were consulted with as it relates to the termination of Deputy Torres?
If I were, I would sit here and say that I was. But in fact, I was not.
I have no further questions.
Just a couple more.
Okay.
So, in fact, you were asked for information concerning what Deputy Torres was doing with respect to his whereabouts.
I'm sorry, I still can't hear you.
The log, is it echoing?
It's echoing.
Okay.
Very much.
Were you asked about what Sheriff Deputy Torres was doing in connection with his whereabouts and the logs?
On May 3rd?
Yes.
Yes.
And you were asked for to supply information about that, correct?
I was told that there was an audit being conducted.
Right.
And basically, they wanted to know why there was inconsistencies.
And in fact, there were daily logs then submitted to the administration to compare to the GPS reports, correct?
Yes.
And you were present at the pre-termination hearing with
yes.
Mr. Torres? Did you submit any information at that hearing?
I was advised not to do so.
And who advised you not to do so?
His attorney on his behalf.
Okay, so, well, I thought you were an independent constitutional officer. I thought that you would make your own decisions about that.
I did make my own decision. She requested it, and I abide by it.
Okay, so you didn't provide any information contrary to anything the county had to say at the pre-termination hearing?
I didn't think it would do any good because I figured it was already done.
Well, my question is you didn't, in fact, provide any information to rebut anything that the county put in its pre-termination letter, correct?
No, because I hadn't really had a chance to review anything and question anybody about it.
Okay.
So the answer is no.
I'm sorry. Thank you. And no other questions.
And Ms. Murray?
What would you have rebutted?
In my mind, I don't think there's much I could have done because I feel like I'm just being bulldozed anyway.
Were you given specific information that you could rebut?
No.
No further questions.
Okay, does the board have any questions?
No.
Okay. If not, Ms. Murray, your next witness.
I have no further witness.
Mr. Willoughby, do you have anyone else you would like to call?
I have just a couple of brief rebuttals. Won't take long, but I want to address a few points. Ms. Brewington? I think she's still under oath. I believe she's still under oath under the court rules. I mean, we can re-square her if you want, but I think she remains under oath until the proceedings are over. Okay, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I'm going to ask you some questions about the key fob reports.
Sure.
And the purpose of that is going to go to the accuracy of the GPS information. I'm going to, with Mr. Moore's permission, give out copies of what Ms. Brewington is going to refer to in her testimony. Okay, can you first tell us about the key fob system and how it works in terms of entry to the sheriff's offices?
Sure. Every employee has a key fob to get into the various buildings or work buildings that require access outside of the hours of 8:30 in the morning till 4:30 in the evening. The West Complex, where the sheriff's office is located, that building is closed prior to 8:30 in the morning and after 4:30 in the afternoon. In this case, we're able to pull a report from our ProWatch system that states all times that a key fob is used outside of those normal business hours.
So that would show that if an individual entered the building, that they use their key fob to swipe the system to get in.
Yes, that's
okay.
Correct.
All right. Now, you've got several dates there that I want to go through with you briefly. And again, I just want to compare the key fob information to the GPS information.
Okay.
So the first one I have is March 2nd.
Yes.
Can you tell us about that?
Sure. On the daily log sheet for March 2nd, Deputy Torres stated on his paperwork that he was doing paperwork in the West Complex at 8 o'clock a.m. If you look at the GPS report, it does state that his car turns on at 7:37 a.m., and he proceeds to the West Complex, where he turns his car off at 8:03 a.m. If you look at his key fob access on March the 2nd, he enters the building at 8:03 a.m.
So that verifies that the accuracy of the GPS report?
Yes.
Okay, and now let's go on to the next date, March 8th.
March 8th, if you look at the daily log sheet reported by Deputy Torres, his car started at 7:37, left home at 7:55. He drove to the sheriff's office at the West Complex. His GPS states that he arrived at 8:03 a.m., and he used his key fob.
Are we on the, correct date
Sorry.
There?
Yep. We are March 8th. I'm sorry, I'm on the wrong
one. We did March 2nd, I believe, already.
Let me go back to that one. March 8th, the daily log sheet states that he was doing paperwork at the West Complex at 4:35 p.m. That is on that second page of the daily log sheet. His GPS has him arriving at the West Complex at 4:47.
And what does the key fob show that he entered the building?
4:47.
So again, the GPS and the key fob are exactly the same?
That's correct.
Okay, let's go to the next date, March 22nd.
March 22nd, Deputy Torres's daily log sheet states that he worked until 6 o'clock p.m. His GPS has him arriving at the West Complex at 6:54 p.m., and he used his key fob to enter the building at 6:55.
So again, the GPS and the key fob show that Mr. Torres was in the building at 6:54 or 6:55 p.m., correct?
That is correct.
So both of those are in sync, correct?
Yes.
And they're not. That's not what he put on his daily log. His daily log said he worked until 6.
That is correct.
All right, and let's look at the next entry, March 26.
March 26th, the daily log sheet states that he worked until 4 o'clock p.m. His GPS shows that he arrived at the West Complex at 6:43 p.m., and he used his key fob to enter the building at 6:43 p.m.
So again, the key fob and the GPS are exactly the same time?
Yes.
That's all I have.
Two quick questions. Are you aware that sometimes someone would enter the building with another person and they are using their key fob?
Yes.
Okay. And I want to make sure I understand, was it March 22nd that you said it showed 6:43? The last one you just testified to.
March 22nd, it shows him at, 6:55 is what I stated. He used his key fob to enter the building at 6:55. He arrived at the West Complex at 6:54 on his daily log sheet.
So he was actually working an hour over. Is that correct?
I wouldn't know if he's working or not. I just know he entered the building.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, just to get back to the point, the key fob and the GPS exactly align, correct?
That is correct.
Okay, that's all I have.
Okay, thank you. Did you have any other witnesses?
I'm going to call Mr. Lawson just very briefly. I don't know if the board had questions.
Yeah, did the board have any questions?
Mr. Lawson? Okay, Mr. Lawson, you're still under oath, as the previous witness was. I want to just address briefly with you the chronological timing of your consultations with the sheriff about the termination of Deputy Torres.
Sure.
Okay, so we put together a PowerPoint. Chip, could you go to the first slide for us? Could you take us through your consultations with Sheriff Christopher in connection with the circumstances that ultimately led to Mr. Torres's termination?
Sure. I would offer the handwritten note that I wrote Dennis on April 24th. That was a follow-up to a phone call that I had to Dennis that morning, asking him specific questions about activity regarding April 5th.
All right, just hold on one second. I'm not sure if the that's already been into evidence or not, but I'm going to give the board members copies of the documents. Give me one second here. Okay, I think I have one more for Mr. Moore as well. If I can put my hands on it. Okay, go ahead and review that document with us.
The handwritten letter?
Yes.
Okay, so this is a note I wrote Dennis. Regarding the activity on 4-5, I had overtime requests submitted to me for activity that week, 4 hours of overtime for 4-5-2012. And when I looked at the hours worked, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., and the time the vehicle started at 9:45, and the time that it moved out of Mr. Torres's residence, I had concerns. And I called Dennis about it, and he indicated that he would look into it. I followed up that phone call with this letter just because I had told him for the first time on this day that what was in front of me and what the logs revealed. I wanted to memorialize this in a letter that I jotted down real quick and then sent it to him.
Okay. Now, is it correct that previously on March 27th, the day of the council meeting, you had rejected about 2 hours or more of overtime for Mr. Torres based on his being at the meeting, correct?
That's correct.
So that's what initially led you to be concerned about accurate overtime reports, correct?
That's correct. That's the initial time where I was cross-referencing overtime with GPS reports.
And then you've got the April 5 submission that you had questions about?
Correct.
And you sent that note to Mr. Lineweaver?
Correct.
Okay. Can you take us through the rest of the connections? What did you do after that?
Okay. So that day, I called him and then sent that. And then later that afternoon, there's a second email that Dennis responded 3 p.m. to me. The sheriff is copied, and it's his response to this inquiry.
And what time of day was that?
3 p.m.
And that was on April 24, correct?
Same day.
Okay, let me hand this up. I'll get additional copies for the board.
We've got copies.
You have copies there?
Yeah, they're right there.
Hand those up to the board, please. And what was his response?
Hello, Todd. I've looked into the Torres overtime issue. I interviewed him. He explained me the course of the day in detail. It appears he did work the entire day. Sheriff Christopher was advised of the concern, and he advised if you wish further questions, we can set up a meeting. Again, thanks for the heads up of concern. Respectfully, Dennis.
So, in fact, Sheriff Christopher was advised on that date.
Correct.
April 24th.
According to Dennis.
According to Dennis. Okay. Now, what was the next step in the consultation process with Sheriff Christopher?
Okay, so on April 24th, the same day, at 7:19, I replied to Dennis's response and said, no problem, thanks for looking into it. Can you provide me more details on the type of work he was doing during this time? All the information I have is what I sent you that shows the vehicle never left the residence on Savannah Road until 9:45 a.m. and returned to the same residence and sat idling for over an hour and 20 minutes. Yet the request that was submitted was for work conducted from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. I failed to mention that with the handwritten letter, I sent the daily log copy
right.
of his work. Without further details, I can't approve the overtime request. If you send me the details, I'll take a look. Thanks again. That was to Dennis at 7:19 p.m. Sheriff Christopher copied.
Okay, so you copied that email to Sheriff Christopher, correct?
That's correct.
And did he? Did Sheriff Christopher call you about that or contact you in response to that email?
I received no response from that email.
Okay. What was the next step in the process of consulting with the sheriff about this Mr. Torres' situation?
Okay, so fast forward to the next week, I had received another packet of overtime requests for the sheriff's office. And by Friday of the next week, April 27th, I had cross-referenced the overtime request for those dates and then the GPS reports and sent an email to Dennis and copied How God Win on April 27th.
So that's reflected on the PowerPoint here?
Yes.
Okay. And was there a request to test the GPS that you made?
Yes. There were 4 days in question, April 12th, 13th, 18th, and 19th. I indicated that I already shared my concern on April 5th, where the vehicle wasn't started until 9:45 a.m. The GPS reports for the days in question continued to produce times that differ from Torres's request. I've asked Hal to run a test on the GPS on Torres's vehicle first thing Monday to see if there's a problem with our equipment. After that occurs, I can make a decision on these OT requests. Please note, Deputy Smith's GPS was cross-checked with her overtime request and her vehicle's reports, and all of that coincides with her submitted time of work.
Okay.
Her OT requests have been approved.
So just let me be clear. So you went to the step of cross-checking another deputy's daily log overtime submissions to make sure they were accurate and jibed with the GPS reports.
Yes, that's correct.
And Deputy Smith's, in fact, did jibe with the GPS reports.
That's correct.
And her overtime was approved.
That's correct.
Okay. Next page, Chip. Okay, so just going through the chronology.
Sure.
Again.
So that was Friday, April 27th. By Monday, the vehicle test that everyone's heard about was conducted on April 30th. And I actually got a response from that Friday email to Dennis, from Dennis Monday morning, 8 a.m., saying 10-4, thanks, Dennis.
Okay, so he just responded acknowledging receipt of your email. Okay. So then following up on the chronology, we've heard about the meeting of May 3rd.
Correct.
Now tell us about that.
Okay, so Karen Brewington, Mrs. Brewington, requested a meeting on May 3rd. By this point, we had the information that we had gathered, had presented it, had run the tests, and we were wanting to conduct a further meeting with Mr. Lionweaver and Mr. Christopher about the activity surrounding Torres's logs and overtime requests. So Karen requested a meeting on May 3rd.
Okay, and did Mr. Lineweaver send an email about that?
That's correct. So we met in the morning in Karen's office, it was 10 o'clock or so in the morning. By 4:35 that day, Dennis had responded to that meeting to Karen, copying myself and Sheriff Christopher.
Okay, now this refers to a log for April 4th in the email. Do you see that? And we talked about that earlier in the cross. In fact, doesn't the GPS show that Mr. Torres was in Bridgeville at about 12:30 or 1 o'clock in the afternoon on April 4th?
It does. It shows stops at Troop 5 and then stops at Bridgeville Police Department.
So the county wasn't contending that the GPS report was at odds with his daily log on April 4th at 12:30 or 1 o'clock, correct?
No, that's correct.
In fact, they were perfectly consistent.
That's correct.
Okay. What did you do? What next transpired in connection with the consultations with the sheriff?
Okay, so after the May 3rd meeting, Mr. Lineweaver sent a email to Ms. Brewington stating the GPS must be wrong on May 4th, and Ms. Brewington responded with an email to that. I don't have a copy of that in front of me. But that's May 4th, between Karen and Dennis.
Okay, and just to back up to May 3rd, the sheriff was copied on the email from Chief Deputy Lineweaver, correct? So he was fully aware of that?
Yes, that's correct.
All right.
That was between Dennis and Karen, and sheriff and myself were copied.
All right, so the point is that both you and the sheriff were fully aware of those communications?
Correct.
Okay, so let's go on now to the next page in the chronology, Chip. Okay, so the next date is May 7th.
Yes.
Okay, and that was a meeting with Ms. Brewington, Mr. Lineweaver, and Mr. Torres, correct?
Correct.
Okay, and at that point, to your knowledge, did Mr. Torres say anything about his responses to any of this information? Did he provide any information?
It's my understanding, I was not in the meeting, but Mrs. Brewington reported back to me that there was very little said by Mr. Torres, and as testified, Mr. Lineweaver provided most of the explanations.
Okay, now, do you have knowledge about whether Ms. Brewington followed up to get additional information on that date?
I believe so. In that meeting, that's when she requested the log sheets and followed up on May 8th, asking for the log sheets after they were provided. She reviewed and asked, had additional questions on May 8th.
Okay, so looking at May 8th, the overhead there, it says that the sheriff's office provided the daily log sheets, and then she called Mr. Lineweaver to ask for a discussion about those?
That's correct.
Okay. And then what happened on May 9th?
It's my understanding I wasn't in the meeting, but Karen and Mr. Lineweaver met. I believe Mr. Lineweaver came to Karen's office that morning and reported that the sheriff instructed them not to speak to us.
And who was us?
I would assume that's county administration, including myself and Karen.
And what did you do next to follow up with the investigation?
Well, Karen told me this, and then we thought it prudent to have a meeting with Sheriff Christopher. And on May 9th at 12:27, Karen sent a meeting to the sheriff, copying me, subject meeting, Torres, daily logs, timesheets. And then the email goes into a request to the sheriff to meet with us.
And that's the one that the sheriff said he would not meet with you?
That's the testimony I heard today.
Yes, okay. And you knew that at the time from Ms. Brewington?
Yes.
Okay. And what happened next in the chronology of the termination?
May 9th, that's the call that Karen got from the sheriff instructing us that he would not meet with us.
Okay. And did you move forward with the recommendation to terminate Mr. Torres based on the information you had?
We did.
At some point. And when was that? The May 16th?
That was the May 16th pre-termination letter, yes.
Yeah, okay. Just wanted to move the PowerPoint up ahead. So this says on May 11th there was a second GPS, correct?
That's correct. That's the second
system test that was conducted by Karen and Mr. Godwin to ensure that the system was reporting accurate information in our reports, our daily reports. When that system test was conducted, it was conducted with a sheriff's vehicle that wasn't being used that day. And during the test, it's my understanding the sheriff called Mr. Godwin while they were driving, and he subsequently called and left a message with me as well.
Okay, so the sheriff was aware of that second test?
Yes.
Okay, and he contacted you about it?
I don't know that he knew that we were conducting a system test. He certainly knew that a county employee who's in charge of the vehicles and the GPS was in a vehicle driving it, and it happened to be a sheriff's vehicle.
Okay, and then we talked briefly already about the May 16. That's the date that the pre-termination letter was sent
Correct.
Mr. Torres, correct? And was Sheriff Christopher, did he receive a copy of that?
Yes.
And it says Christopher phone call to Lawson.
Correct. When I contacted Chief Deputy Lineweaver and told him that we were going to move forward with pre-termination, he asked me if I had spoken to anyone else, and I said no. I asked him to call Sheriff Christopher. He did. Sheriff Christopher, in turn, called me, and the pre-termination letter was attempted to be delivered to Deputy Torres that afternoon.
And what did Sheriff Christopher call you about?
He asked me what was going on.
And you gave him the letter, correct?
I told him we were moving forward with termination of Deputy Torres, and the letter was going to be delivered to Mr. Torres that afternoon, and I asked both he and Mr. Lineweaver, when I spoke to them, for any assistance that they could provide me.
Okay, and then the next date is listed as May 18. What happened that day?
That's the pre-termination meeting that took place in caucus room with Sheriff Christopher and Deputy Torres, myself, and Karen and Marcia.
Okay, so Sheriff Christopher was present?
That's correct.
And you heard him testify that he didn't offer any information that was contrary to what you had set forth in the May 16 pre-termination letter?
That's correct.
And is that accurate?
That is accurate.
And then based on the information you had and the lack of any response, did you move forward with the decision to terminate Mr. Torres?
That is correct. We did.
And that was the May 22nd letter?
That is correct.
Okay. Thank you. That's all I have for this witness.
Ms. Murray.
Sussex County Code 2915C, the first sentence, a permanent employee may be dismissed or demoted whenever, in the judgment of the administrator, after consultation with the department head, the employee's work or misconduct so warrants. Is Chief Deputy Dennis Lineweaver the department head?
No.
Because there's an awful lot in there about talking to Dennis Lineweaver and copying Sheriff Christopher. What dates were checked for Pat Smith? That was on the slide there. It said that you compared Pat Smith's logs to, actually, what did you say?
Once I started having questions about the overtime that was submitted by Deputy Torres and cross-referenced the GPS logs, let's just say April, because the letter was dated April 24th, the activity was involving the end of March. So let's say March, end of March, I started cross-referencing every overtime submission from anyone in the sheriff's office with their daily logs.
Okay. And do you have the dates that you checked for Pat Smith?
I have the specific dates that are listed in the April 27th email, which was when I received the sheriff's packet of overtime for that previous week. So whatever was in that packet was cross-referenced, and that's where I made reference to say I cross-checked her overtime. Her vehicle reports all coincide with her submitted time of work. her overtime was approved.
But you don't have the actual dates there?
I don't have them in front of me, okay. But I have the actual dates.
Okay.
We have copies of every overtime submission that she provided.
Okay.
And predominantly, Deputy Smith and Deputy Torres were handing in the most overtime. That's why we referenced her as well.
Sheriff Christopher testified that he said to Karen Brewington that you should call him with questions. Did you hear that testimony?
Yes.
Did Karen Brewington tell you that Sheriff Christopher said to call him if you had questions?
I'm sure she did, yes.
Okay. Did you contact Sheriff Christopher?
After that particular exchange, I did not call him.
Okay. I'd like to read from the transcript of the day one testimony where I asked you, did you notify Sheriff Christopher that you were considering termination? Your answer, on May 3rd, no. My question, after that, and you said, I don't think we notified anyone that we were considering termination. We were looking into the reports. And I think it was clear that an investigation was taking place based on the fact that myself, I was talking to Dennis, Karen, and trying to interview the staff and Mr. Torres specifically. So as of May 3rd, your testimony is we were still in an investigatory phase.
I'd say it's accurate.
Okay. Sometime after May 3rd, but before May 16th, you made a decision to move toward termination.
That's correct.
Is that correct?
That's correct.
Did you talk to Sheriff Christopher about that decision in the interim of May 3rd to May 16th?
I did not.
I have no further questions.
Just one follow-up. So were you told that Sheriff Christopher did not want to speak with you?
That's right. We met on May 3rd in person. There was a follow-up meeting on May 7th that was illustrated on the slides. And by May 9th, we were told by Chief Deputy Lineweaver that no one in the sheriff's office was going to speak to us. And then the sheriff himself told Karen herself directly that he refused to meet with us. And it's hard to consult with the chief deputy or the sheriff when they refuse to meet with us.
And then you gave him Mr. Torres the pre-termination letter on May 16, correct?
That's correct.
And there was a meeting on May 18 that Sheriff Christopher did attend, and he did not offer any information, correct?
He did not offer any information anytime.
Thank you.
Mr. Willoughby, do you have, or the board, do you have any questions for Mr. Lawson?
In your communication, at any point did you feel that the Sheriff's Department was not going to cooperate at all and therefore you didn't need to pursue any more information with them?
I was hoping to get cooperation, but when I was told that he wouldn't meet with us, and I was told by his chief deputy that they were ordered not to speak to us, it was very difficult for us to continue that interaction.
Thank you.
Thank you. Do you have any other witnesses, Mr. Willoughby?
No.
I would actually like to recall Sheriff Christopher for one question.
Can I step down?
Yes. Yes, you may.
You are still under oath.
Yes.
Did on May 9th, did you say you would not meet with Karen Brewington and Todd Lawson?
I did not.
What did you say?
I told her in the phone conversation that we started out about George Wilson, then it got into Pete Torres. First of all, I thought it was about George Wilson until Torres was brought up. I told her that the deputies feel intimidated and feel harassed. I felt that it was wrong for them to usurp me by going around me and directly to the deputies. At the end of the conversation, she said she had pertinent need to determine some information. I said, that's fine. make sure you tell Todd or Mike Vincent or anyone else in the county council who would like to discuss it or talk to me about it to let me know when and where. I told the last words out of my mouth were, tell Todd to call me directly, and he did not call me.
That was my last question. Were you called?
I was not.
That's all I have.
All right, you said you would speak with anybody at any time about the issue. Is that correct?
During that conversation, I told her anytime she wants me to come with the deputies or anybody that she had to question, I would want to be there.
Well, there was a pre-termination hearing, and you understand that the purpose of the pre-termination hearing is to have the employee put forth any information they thought might be relevant to the decision to dismiss them. And you testified on your direct that you did not give any information at that meeting, correct?
At the pre-termination hearing after the May 9th?
On May 18th. You did not give any information at the May 18th meeting, correct?
No, I didn't.
Okay, that's all I have.
Is it your impression at the pre-termination meeting that the termination was happening?
I was under the understanding that it pretty much was a done deal, and there was no way it was going to be reversed at all.
And were you given any specific information that you could have refuted at that meeting?
Nothing at all.
Okay.
All the questions were directed towards Pete. Pete read the statement, and that was it.
Okay, thank you.
Are there any other witnesses by either party at this point? Okay. We had indicated when we originally set up the procedure that I announced last week that we would allow for closing arguments. And since the burden is on the deputy, would you like to give your closing right now?
Take the deep breath. Section 2915F states that if the board finds the action was based on political, religious, or racial prejudice, or that the administrator failed to follow the proper procedure outlined in subsection C, the employee shall be reinstated to his former position without loss of pay. Let's look at those. Political? I don't think it's a big leap to see that Deputy Torres could be targeted for political purposes when you consider the backdrop of the sheriff and the Sussex County Council. The disagreement between these bodies is well known. Sheriff Christopher testified that he was told by Todd Lawson that they're not going to refill the deputy positions vacated by Deputy Torres and another deputy that recently left. Stripping the sheriff of personnel is one way to make sure he is ineffective in his job. If he's ineffective in his job, the voters may take action. The unilateral action taken against Deputy Torres can absolutely be categorized as political. Religious? At this point, there's nothing to show religious prejudice. Racial? Well, he is the only Hispanic employee of the county, but that could mean nothing. If the county administrator failed to follow the proper procedures in subsection C, did he consult with the department head? Does a single meeting on May 3rd with Sheriff Christopher inquiring about inconsistencies really constitute consulting with the department head? Sheriff Christopher was as surprised as Deputy Torres that the county had moved forward with termination. He testified that there was no other communication after the May 3rd meeting with Todd Lawson. It is safe to say that the department head was not consulted, and that is a direct violation of subsection C. Did the county administrator use good judgment in his finding of misconduct? Todd Lawson cited three grounds for termination: misappropriation of overtime, falsification of documentation, and abuse of county equipment. Let's talk about misappropriation of overtime. Is it that he submitted overtime when he had 143.12 hours of idle time in a two-month period? Idle time that four other deputies aver is not uncommon. Sheriff Christopher has testified is not uncommon. Chief Deputy Lineweaver has testified is not uncommon. Idle time that is substantiated only by GPS reports that have many instances of 0 miles per hour with address changes, the ignition being turned off but registering speed. Reports that were printed on May 23rd when Deputy Torres was terminated on May 22nd. Is it about the spreadsheet that showed a cumulative overpayment of $784.89? It's important to note that the basis of their calculation is time calculations from the infamous GPS reports. They have comments included like Georgetown Middle School or 22538 DE62 with time calculations, but never inquired of Deputy Torres why he may have been there. Georgetown Middle School with 6 different addresses, none of which are correct. 22538 DE62, he was washing his vehicle and was seen doing so by Sheriff Christopher. 15088 Abbott's Pond Road, yes, this is his mother's address. But the GPS report does not show 15088 Abbott's Pond Road at all on that date. This report is conclusory without investigation. Is it about the 18.48 hours of idle time at his residence? I direct you to Justin Whitaker's testimony that he jump-started Deputy Torres's car frequently. Anyone who has had to jump-start their car knows that you have to let the car idle for a while so that the alternator can charge the battery. 18 hours over 2 months? Totally believable. Falsification of documents. What documents were falsified? Once again, the entire case hangs on the GPS reports differing from the daily log sheets. If anything, Deputy Torres provided more precise times than other deputies. He has testified that his logs are true. He knew there was a GPS. Does it make sense for a person to falsify time when he knows it can be checked? I submit it does not. Count 3, abuse of county equipment. A mechanic friend diagnoses a problem and does not work on the car. He sends his friend to the county mechanic because he isn't authorized to work on his car. And before this gets spun that because his neighbor jump-started his car that he abused county equipment that way, let's address it right now. I guess he should have called the county mechanic or tow truck driver daily and waited and allowed his documents to pile up so that he had overdue documents. It's ridiculous. Instead, he just dealt with what he had so that he could get his work done. The documents got served. He had the second largest area and wasn't overdue on his documents. Let's talk about what isn't in evidence. Karen Brewington testified that they checked Deputy Pat Smith's daily work logs against her GPS and that they matched. Where is that? She also testified that they looked at the idle times of all deputies and that Deputy Torres has the most idle time. Is that in evidence? Did they ask Deputy Torres if he leaves his car virtually running virtually all of the time? What else didn't they ask him? They didn't ask about Fruitland Avenue. They didn't ask about Georgetown Middle School. They didn't show him a GPS report, and they didn't give him a single concrete example of how his daily activity log didn't match his GPS. Right is right, wrong is wrong. Deputy Torres is a good deputy who has nothing to hide. He goes above and beyond. Sussex County Administration didn't do their homework, abused their power, and targeted a good deputy. Remember, Karen Brewington testified that they haven't paid him for his sick leave because they're still determining if he was overpaid. The policy doesn't say anything about not paying for sick leave if an employee was overpaid. So what authority do they have? Todd Lawson testified that this is his first termination. He oversaw an investigation that gathered a bunch of information, but didn't ask very many direct questions. Saying the GPS and the daily logs aren't matching is totally different from on this date. Why is the daily log showing a start time of 8 and the GPS showing an ignition on at 9 a.m.? If they had asked the specific questions, they would have gotten specific answers, but they didn't. Ask yourself why. The Sussex County Code says that the administrator has the authority to terminate an employee after consultation with the department head. Ask yourself why Todd Lawson didn't contact Sheriff Christopher at all after the May 3rd meeting, a meeting that even Todd Lawson testified was investigatory in nature. Mr. Lawson testified that as of May 3rd, no decision had been made as to whether or not they were going in the direction of termination. So sometime after May 3rd, he makes a determination that Deputy Torres should be terminated and doesn't tell the department head? This is a bad precedent to set and should not go unchecked. Balance of power and the ability to check the power of a governmental body is a cornerstone of American democracy. You are the check on the Sussex County administration. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Mr. Willoughby.
Thank you. Well, it's been a long couple of days of hearing, and you've gotten hundreds of pages of documents, and we want to thank you for all your time and attention to this matter. I want to start my closing really where I left off in my opening. I think Chip's firing up the PowerPoint for me. And Ms. Murray talked about the county code and the county ordinance. I think that's an appropriate thing to consider. If we look at the conditions of tenure, of service in the county, it's set forth in the code there, and it says that a permanent employee may be dismissed or demoted whenever in the judgment of the county administrator, that's Mr. Lawson, after consultation with the department head, that the employee's misconduct or actions warrant dismissal. So I want to talk a little bit today about the allegations that were established concerning Mr. Torres and the misappropriation and misconduct of that he engaged in, including misappropriation of overtime and the other allegations, falsification of documentations that we had talked about. The evidence that Mr. Torres falsified daily logs and weekly overtime requests is really beyond overwhelming. Ms. Brewington supplied you with 25 different days where his daily logs were inaccurate. In fact, Chief Deputy Lineweaver admitted that the GPS logs are, quote, largely accurate, even though, in fact, there was no incidents they've proven where they were inaccurate. In fact, everything that's been proven shows that the GPS logs are accurate. The dates are set forth in the summary document that's at 529-31. I don't have time to review all of those, but what I wanted to do was just to give you a representative sampling of the falsification by Deputy Torres. So what I did was I took one day in each of the 8 weeks of the audit, and I'd like to review that with you now. If you can, Chip, put up the overhead. These are eight egregious days of falsification by Mr. Torres, and there's really no question about it. I mean, the idea that the GPS working, you know, quite frankly, to me, that's the adult equivalent of the third grader excuse that the dog ate my homework or something like that. I mean, there's just no rational explanation for that. You know, they haven't offered any tests of their own. We've got all the verifications through the tests that we've heard about. Mr. Godwin, the second test, the verified report from the GPS vendor. I mean, there's really no serious question about it. I will agree with one thing Ms. Murray said. The case hinges on their claim that the GPS system doesn't work. I mean, if they can't prove the GPS system doesn't work, there's simply no basis for Mr. Torres's allegations that he did not falsify documents. So let's first go through the eight days and talk about that a little bit. First one is February 27. The daily log start time. This is in the transcript of the first day of hearing. The top reference is to the pages of the transcript that begins on page 43. And the daily log start time is 8 a.m. But the GPS vehicle start time is not until an hour and 45 minutes later, 9:46 a.m. And the vehicle didn't leave his home until 10:07 a.m., almost 2 hours later. Again, that's in the record. The documents are referred to. Chip, we have the next. You've got it up there already. So the false reports in the daily log are listed there. He says he was in Bridgeville at 8 a.m. He didn't start the vehicle until 9:46 a.m. And there's no question. I mean, Deputy Chief Lineweaver admitted that these daily logs, the dates, the times, and the dates are expected to be accurate. So did the chief. So there's no question that these are records of when they were there serving papers, and that's what the purpose of entering those timesheets is. So there's simply no way that Mr. Torres could have been in Bridgeville at 8 a.m. when his vehicle didn't leave the driveway until 10:07 a.m. Other false reports on the same date: Greenville 11:30, Greenville again 11:55, and he reported that a subject was evading service. Well, that's particularly disturbing. I mean, he's not even left his driveway. And if it becomes a dispute in court as to whether a subject's evading service or not, there's going to be a document produced from a deputy claiming that the subject was evading service when, in fact, the deputy hadn't even been out there to try to serve the paperwork. Another point I think that's significant here is, you know, they keep bringing up excuse after excuse. That, you know, they say, well, maybe he was working at home. Sheriff said he was deciphering paperwork after 9 months of being on the job. There's no reference on his daily log that he was working at home on none of these. I mean, he doesn't say I was working at home, you know, looking at my day or things like that. In fact, there are specific entries we've gone over where he said he was in a different location. Wilson Hill Road, idle time 50 minutes. 50 minutes at Wilson Hill Road. You know, again, that is not time during which I think someone would be attaching a scanner and then taking it off and a deputy going about his business. That's time, as the neighbor said, spent shooting the breeze.
Mr. Willoughby, I yeah. hate to interrupt you, but I, excuse me, I heard you say Greenville.
Did I say Greenville?
It does indicate
Wilson
up
Hill.
There Greenville.
There's
a Greenwood, you mean?
Yes.
Greenwood and Bridgeville?
I'm sorry. You're correct.
All right.
I said Greenville, huh?
Said Greenville. We're up wrong.
I think there'll be some people in upstate that might be a little bit upset about that, huh? As would the people in Greenwood. And it's actually typed wrong on my PowerPoint there, the second one. So apologize for that. And it was the last points were the Wilson Hill Road idle time and the Fruitland Avenue, which again we had to drag out of him today. It was his spouse's working location. He was there for 32 minutes. So let's go now to March 9. That's in the transcript again. The start time on the daily log is 7 a.m. The GPS vehicle start time is 6:48 a.m. He doesn't leave his home until 7:27 a.m. His daily log, though, shows that he was in Ellendale at 7:05 a.m. He hadn't even left his home until 7:27. It also shows he was in Ellendale again at 7:18, and I guess he made pretty good time if he left at 7:27 to get to Ellendale by 7:36. And this was the date that he stopped at his mother's residence, as now has been admitted. Okay, let's go to March 20. Again, this is it, the transcript is referred to. The daily log start time is 7 a.m. That's at page 207 of the binder you've been given. The GPS vehicle start time is not till 8:42 a.m. He doesn't leave home until 8:56 a.m. He reports that he was in, again, these are false entries. He reports that he was in Bridgeville at 7:45. He was in Bridgeville again at 7:58. And he actually reports making a service at a time when he hadn't even left his driveway. I think that's a huge falsification. It has great implications for the sheriff's department as well as for the potential parties to any kind of litigation. And that day he claimed 5 hours of overtime as well. March 28, daily log time, 7 a.m. GPS vehicle start time, 10:01 a.m., 3 hours later. And he doesn't leave home until 10:24 a.m. False reports, he says he attempted service in Bridgeville at 8:15, 8:35, 9 a.m., and 9:30. He says he posted something in Greenwood, not Greenville, at 10:18, and he was in Greenwood again at 10:35 a.m. His actual working time on that day was only 5 hours and 38 minutes, although the county was charged for a full day. Next date, April 3rd, daily log start time. Again, the daily logs, as I think one of the members asked him about, are the documents that he himself prepared and entered the times, and which Chief Deputy Lineweaver and Sheriff Christopher both admitted were expected to be accurate. 8 a.m., daily log start time, vehicle start time, 4 hours later, 11:07 a.m., vehicle doesn't leave home until 11:18 a.m. False reports include Bridgeville at 8:45 a.m. He puts a specific note on his log that the subject's evading service. Same thing again on the log second time. Greenwood at 9:30, Milford at 10 a.m., Lincoln at 10:35 a.m. So again, all these times he's reporting he did activities on behalf of the sheriff's office, and they're simply not true. I mean, he was not doing that. He was falsifying his daily log entries, which the testimony is clear that the logs not only record when he was making service, but they were also used for personnel purposes, for reporting salary information that he was going to be paid for. And also that date, he had a 37-minute stop at the Fruitland Avenue address where his wife works. Let's go to April 13, daily log start time. This again, his reported start time, 8 a.m. The GPS shows the vehicle started at 10:38 and did not leave his home until 11:23, 3 hours and 23 minutes later. False reports, he said he was in Troop 5 in Bridgeville at 8:45. He was in Bridgeville again from 9:18, 9:45, 9:35, 10 a.m., and in Greenwood at 11 a.m. Again, although he was doing something at home between his reported start time of 8 a.m. and when he actually left home at 11:23 a.m., he makes no report that he was working at home, no report that he was preparing for the day, and simply there's just no basis to suggest that he was actually working on the county's behalf during that time. And he claimed 2.5 hours of overtime that day. Let's go to April 19. Daily log start time, 8 a.m., and that's in page 453 of your binder. Vehicle start time, an hour and 45 minutes later, 9:46 a.m., left home, 9:50. He reported working at the complex at 8:30 a.m., even though his vehicle didn't even start until 9:46 a.m. So he's saying he was in the sheriff's complex, the West Complex, at 8:30 a.m., when his vehicle didn't leave the driveway until 9:50 a.m. This is the one where the daily log sheet wasn't received until later. We don't know where it was, but we finally received it. Again, it does not report that he was working at home during this time. He reports he was going to the West Complex at 8:30, even though his vehicle never left home to 9:50. Okay, April 23rd, daily log starts at 8 a.m. Vehicle start time, 9:04 a.m., doesn't leave home until 10:15 a.m., almost 2 hours after it started. He alleges that he actually made service in Greenwood at 10 a.m. He spent 40 minutes from 11:55 a.m. to 12:35 p.m., 35 p.m., on Wilson Hill Road. And Wilson Hill Road is not mentioned on his log. In fact, his log claims he was at other locations. That day, he put in for 3 hours of overtime from the county. We'll go to that one a bit. When you look at these days, the number of days that were submitted, I mean, we've got some 25 days of false entries, and we've reviewed a number of them now. There's simply no basis to believe that the GPS was in any way inaccurate. As I said before, Chief Deputy Lineweaver admitted it was largely accurate, and we did all the tests, and we had the verification. So simply to hang your hat on the claim that the GPS is wrong is simply utterly implausible. And so I think that there's no question that the county has established that it that he falsified his records, and that has serious consequences, as we've talked about. I want to talk a little bit now about the overtime claim. You can go ahead, and that's up there now, Chip. Deputy Torres put in for some $6,000 in overtime in a 10-month period, by far and away more than any other deputy. I mean, that in itself is a red flag. And I don't know if this strikes anybody else, but it struck me that when I saw the garnishment papers, that on a monthly basis, the amount of the overtime that he was getting is almost equal to the amount of the withholding. So whether that was his motive or not, or whether he was just trying to build up his hours, I don't know, but certainly he had every motive to increase the overtime that he was receiving. The report that Karen did that she testified to shows at least $785 in funds that the county paid Mr. Torres that he was not entitled to receive. They simply made no serious attempt to rebut that. They have made no explanation as to how he was entitled to receive all the money that he has claimed. So again, I think there's no question when you go back to the ordinance that this is the kind of misconduct that warrants dismissal. In fact, the sheriff and the chief deputy both admitted that if in fact the GPS is correct, and if in fact there was falsification of documentation and overtime, that will be grounds for discipline and including and up until and including discharge. Let's talk a little bit about the abuse of county time and equipment. Now I know they've made some attempt to explain away the fact that he spent 143 hours of idle time. That is over 50% of the time he spent working in an 8-week period. I mean, that's an astounding number, and it, according to them, he had one of the largest territories. So that means he would be expected to be moving most of that time, not sitting in his driveway or elsewhere, such as Wilson Road. That is over 50%. That's abuse of county time and equipment. And he took the vehicle to Wilson Road, for example, and had someone else look at it. He left it running for 140 hours. Even if he used that for some of that time for working, that's an excessive number, and that's an abuse of county time and equipment to be sitting there burning gas and running the vehicle for all those hours. We've talked about the Wilson Avenue testimony and the Fruitland Avenue addresses that he went to repeatedly. I'm not going to go over those again with you at this point. I want to go now to the defenses that they have raised. And the first defense is that the GPS doesn't work. I mean, that is that is the cornerstone of their defense. And there's simply no basis to believe that GPS is not working. If the board believes the GPS is accurate, even if it was largely accurate, as Chief Deputy Leinlever testified, we have massive evidence of falsification of documentation, that being the daily log, as well as his overtime requests. I've talked about the test we did. I'm not going to go over that again. Mr. Godwin doing two tests and getting the verification from the vendor. Another defense that they floated and seem to have backed off from is a so-called alternator defense, and they're claiming that the vehicle wouldn't start in the morning. They never really were very specific about how often they had to jump the battery. But that's a very curious thing, because as the witnesses admitted on the stand, including the neighbor, Justin Whitaker, I believe his name was, if the alternator is not working, then how is the vehicle going to restart during the day? Because it's not charging the battery. So they're telling us that in the morning he had to charge the vehicle, but for some reason during the day he could start it and restop it, and it would run. And they've never tried to tie that to how it is allegedly this is going to impact the GPS. I mean, there's no explanation of that at all, how this alleged alternator problem could somehow make some kind of an error in the GPS. So again, that's another red herring I think they've thrown up to try to deflect the board's attention from the real issues in the case. Let me talk a little bit about the suggestion that was made, at least in the opening. I didn't hear it repeated in the closing, that Mr. Torres was entitled to a prior warning before being terminated. It's fundamental in employment law and in human resources that when you have serious misconduct, such as falsification of documents, falsification of overtime, intentional misconduct of that kind, you don't have progressive discipline. That's a breach of the ethics, a breach of the honesty, a breach of all the standards expected of an employee in their work. So again, there's no need for any kind of a prior warning about that kind of misconduct. It's not like you progressively discipline somebody for saying I'm unlawfully taking overtime or falsifying documents. The next point I want to address is the question of the consultations issue, and if you go to that, Chip. I think I'll not go through all this as much detail as we did in the testimony, but the code requires consultation between the administrator and the department head. The code does not say the consent of the department head. Those words are used advisedly. Certainly, there can't be any question that Mr. Lawson did everything in his power and in fact consulted with the sheriff concerning these issues. All of the testimony is that the sheriff would not cooperate with him but would not give him information. They made much of the claim that between May 9 and the ultimate pre-termination letter of May 16, that the sheriff didn't speak with the county administrator, Mr. Lawson. Well, the testimony is from their own mouths that they were told they were not going to cooperate with the investigation. They were not going to give information to the county about this. And the proof of the pudding is that after the pre-termination letter is delivered, and the letter is in the file, I'm not going to read it, but it says it's a recommendation for discharge, and it says that it's an opportunity for the employee to give any information that he or she believes is pertinent to be considered in connection with the termination. The proof of the pudding is that the sheriff was there and simply refused to provide any information. So there was nothing to contrary to what the county had set forth in the letter, and there's still nothing contrary to what's set forth in the letter in terms of the proof of what took place. But it shows that Mr. Lawson discharged his obligation to consult with, and consult in the dictionary means provide information, have a dialogue. Mr. Lawson did all of those things. It does not mean consent. In fact, it would not make any sense, I would submit, for the administrator of the county, the top executive official of the county, to have the consent of one of the department heads to make a dismissal decision. It seems to me that what they've tried to do is they've tried to deflect the entire hearing away from the facts. They're trying to make this a political football. The sheriff talks about being usurped constantly and raising issues that really have nothing to do with this. This is a very simple, straightforward case. The county has found an employee who unfortunately lacks the integrity and honesty to continue to be an employee. He falsified these records. He applied, took overtime he wasn't entitled to. And that's the reason for the dismissal. It has nothing to do with any other political agenda that the sheriff may have. In fact, he admitted he said it had to do with the lawsuit he filed, but he had to admit that the lawsuit was filed almost a month after the time that this investigation began. Just want to close with one final thought, and that is, when I was a young lawyer, I remember hearing about John Adams, who had a very politically controversial trial in his day before he became the second president. And he said something, I think, that when the other side tried to turn it into a political controversy, as has been done here, he said, facts are stubborn things. Facts are stubborn things. Here are the facts. Mr. Torres falsified records. He falsified over time. He abused county equipment. Nothing else has been raised by the county as an issue. This is all an attempt by them to deflect the issue to a political controversy. But the facts are the facts, and Mr. Torres deserved to be warranted termination, and that's what the county did, and that, I would submit, is completely appropriate. Thank you.
Thank you. Did you have just a brief comment?
And actually, it's just an offer to the personnel board of the 8 egregious days. And I only have 6 of them here, but the other 2 are here. Early, I talked about daily work logs and returns, okay, and that the returns prove service. Now, these are not the signed version because we couldn't get them from the court in time. But these are printed official returns that show what was served and to whom it was served. Mr. Willoughby has said in his closing that he falsified service to people. I submit, if you would like these, that you should consider them as part of the big picture that he did serve documents. This now, and I qualify it. It does not do attempts, it doesn't do anything like that, but in terms of service of documents to people and tying it to the logs, this is here. And I'm prepared to approach and hand it to you if I can get the other 2 days. I've got 6. I just need to know what the 8 egregious days are. But that's completely up to you.
I certainly have no objection to having documents put in the case, but excuse me. But these documents, as I understand it, they don't show times or anything like that. These are just documents that are unsigned, prove very little. So again, it's an informal hearing. I say fine.
Thank you.
Okay. We would have no objection if you do, but it would go to the weight, the fact
that they're... I understand. That's perfectly fine. I just want them in. I need the days, though. Where's Chip?
I got it here.
Okay. Yes. Please do.
February 27th.
Yep. Okay. April 3rd, April 13th. I got the rest of them.
April 13th, April 19th.
And April 23rd.
Okay, are there no other comments? At this point, the hearing itself is closed. We've had all the evidence. We've had opening and closing arguments. I do have a handout to the board, and it is simply a copy of Section 2915 of the county code. We've had each council mention this, and it was briefly up on the screen, and it is helpful for them to actually have this in front of them. So in deliberating, and I'll pass.
Thank you.
And in particular, I have bracketed items C, D, E, and F, because those are the provisions that are the ones that are the most pertinent. And I'll just briefly read those. C, a permanent employee may be dismissed or demoted whenever, in the judgment of the administrator, after consultation with the department head, the employee's work or misconduct so warrants. When the administrator decides to take such action, he shall file with the employee and the personnel board a written notification containing a statement of the substantial reasons for the action. The employee shall be notified not later than the effective date of the action. The notice shall inform the employee that he shall be allowed 2 calendar days from the effective date of the action to file a reply with the administrator and the personnel board and to request a hearing before the personnel board. The pay plan rule shall provide for changes in compensation resulting from demotions. If the employee files a reply and requests a hearing with a prescribed period, the personnel board shall schedule a hearing within 10 days after receiving the appeal. At the discretion of the employee, the hearing may be private or open to the public, and a complete record of all proceedings during the hearing may be made should the employee be willing to bear the full costs of the preparation of such a record. E, in conducting the hearing, the proceeding shall be informal, and it shall be assumed that the action complained of was taken in good faith unless proven otherwise. And F, if the board finds the action was based on political, religious, or racial prejudice, or that the administrator failed to follow the proper procedure outlined in subsection C, the employee shall be reinstated to his former position without loss of pay. In all other cases wherein the board does not sustain the action of the administrator, the board's findings and recommendations shall be advisory in nature, and the administrator may affirm the original action or modify it pursuant to the board's recommendations. This will be the time that the board will deliberate, and I have prepared a sheet for the board, which I will read. At the completion of the testimony and closing arguments, the board may, number one, proceed with deliberations forthwith, or move to recess to a later time for a decision. If so, if that is not later today, then the time and place must be posted. If you decide to proceed with deliberations, the decision should be made by motion properly seconded and voted on. And then I'm going to give you two examples, one for each side, how possibly you could make that motion. If you believe the county has made its case and the deputy failed to show that the county did not follow proper procedures or his firing was not based on political reasons or racial prejudice, then your motion may be fine, may be in the form of, I move that this board sustain the decision of the county administrator in that the county had sufficient evidence for the termination, it followed proper procedures,
and the deputy failed to show the firing was for political, religious, or racial prejudices. If you feel that the evidence was not sufficient to support the firing, or that it was based on political, religious, or racial prejudice, or that the county failed to follow proper procedures, you may make a motion as follows. I move that this board overturn the decision of the county administrator because, and then you would fill in the reasons, did not have enough evidence, did not follow the proper procedures, or was based on political, religious, or racial prejudice. After the motion is made and seconded, the motion should be discussed. After the discussion, then there would be a vote taken. And when voting, each member should state the reasons for the vote.
Gentlemen, is there a motion to proceed or delay the hearing?
I'd like to make a motion that we take a 10-minute recess before we proceed any further.
Second.
Second. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 We'll recess for 10 minutes and be back to continue.
Okay, I would like to point out that your any vote that you take, since it was requested to be in public, that it be done so in public, motions would need to be made in public and the reason stated, as I indicated here.
Well, I'll stay right here because I've made up my mind.